Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to contact us, please send us an email at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or contact us through our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are all archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about intuition. And you know, intuition is something that people talk about, kind of just generally. I feel that I had an intuition, I had a feeling, but don't really think about so much. So let's think about it, and let's think about how we can use our intuition to help us to get our group, our participants, to a successful outcome, to reach their goal. Yeah. So, like we often do on this show, and thank you, I see there's lots of people, thank you all for being here. Like we often do on this show, we're going to define what we mean by intuition within our context, within the context of a negotiation, a mediation, a workshop, a seminar, an alternative dispute resolution, whatever it is that, well, quite frankly, we're usually the leader, whatever it is that we are leading or participating in that is working together towards a common goal. So let's define what in this particular context intuition means. Oh, and I see we have lots of wonderful definitions. You know, Ballari and others, and this is really the basis definition for this. Ballari and others are saying that intuition within our context is knowing what to do without conscious reasoning. What a good way of doing it, of saying that. Knowing what to do without conscious reasoning. We just know. It just comes to us. We don't give it, we don't write it down and think about it for days and like that. As we are leading, as we are within the process, we know what to do without conscious reasoning. I know, I like that. Patrick and others are adding to it. And they're saying that without conscious reasoning is really knowledge based on experience. And yes, I think that's probably true. Knowledge based on experience. Mm-hmm. You've done this before, maybe you haven't even led a negotiation before, but you've negotiated with people all your life, right? All on your job, on your personal life, in your family life, you're always negotiating with people and thinking about what it is that you would like in relationship to what they would like. Mm-hmm. And how to make consensus, really, right? Yeah. So you know what to do without conscious reasoning because your knowledge is based on experience. Mm-hmm. And it's not so much even, I think, experience in the particular topic, but really experience in dealing with people, which is the way that you get intuition, the way that you know something without conscious reasoning. You could just you just know it. You can look at them and see that that's the way it should go, right? Do you ever have that? You just know something. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are saying that intuition cuts both ways. And I suppose it does, because we're assuming that we were right, correct? We're assuming that our intuition was good and that we made the right call, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And it is a good point that sometimes if you rely on intuition, sometimes you're wrong. Sometimes that's not, a very good point is being made, that intuition may be knowledge without conscious reasoning, and it may be based on experience. But it's also, I don't want to use the word tainted. People are using the word tainted. It's also influenced by our own personality, right? Our own background. Yes, our own preconceived notions. We did a whole show on that. These shows are archived on our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. And we do refer to self-fulfilling prophecy to a great extent of preconceived notions. And it really means, I know that we have a lot of listeners from before. Thank you all for coming. And a lot of new listeners, thank you all for coming too. A preconceived notion is something that you think about the world, about your place in it, probably, and about how other people are. People calling a preconceived notion a bias. I suppose that's really true, that a preconceived notion is kind of your bias towards or against something. I think the word bias has a negative connotation, and preconceived notions can go both ways. They might be correct. They might be a good idea about a group of people or about someone you've dealt with before and you had experience with, so you expect them to be the same way now. They're created by experience, yes. And, well, George and others are saying that they're a basis for looking at the world. And I suppose that's true. And they do figure into intuition because that's the unconscious reasoning. Mm-hmm. Without conscious reasoning, without conscious thought, and about experience. Because intuition's kind of fast, right? It's acting or getting an idea based on a fairly fast thought while you're in the process, while you're dealing with people. You make a kind of a snap decision as to which way the next step should go, how the process should be led. Yeah, not you do it as you're sitting there. That's what intuition is. It's not a write it down overnight, think on it. Like you always have to think, of course, and listen. And we always say we think before we speak, always. But still, intuition's a thing that happens while you're sitting there, right? When you're dealing with people. And that does go to some preconceived notions because they factor in your own preconceptions, right? Yeah. People are calling preconceived notions bigotry. We decided on several shows worth, and they're all archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com, that bigotry is overt. It's a learned behavior. Discrimination, prejudice, is a learned behavior. It's overt. And prejudice usually has very little to do with actual interaction. It's not a personal formed opinion due to personal experience. It's usually something you were taught. And because you were taught the prejudice, you shy away from the personal experience. You don't go near that kind of person, or you don't do this. Yeah. It's kind of something that keeps you from getting a personal experience and changing your mind, right? A preconceived notion is when you've had a personal experience that kind of colors your thinking in the future. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of preconceived notions. I know this because I think that I have to think about them when I'm thinking about something intuitive or I'm making a quick decision. And I actually try to consciously think about whether or not doing this, not because of this group that's in front of me, these individual human beings who are interacting with me and with each other and trying to reach a common good goal, but whether I'm reacting, I'm doing this because of my experience with other groups. You see? And that's where you have your experience comes into intuition. And you have to be certain that you're dealing with the group that's in front of you. Does that make sense? Yeah, I'm getting a lot of agreement. Because we see a lot of people, right? And we see a lot of groups, and we do a lot of workshops and seminars, and we deal with a lot of individuals who are participants in the group, therefore part of the group dynamic. And you got to remember to deal with this group and see them as the individual participants coming together that they are, and not be dealing with the last group. Is that, yeah. Yeah, there is an expression, I don't know if it's an Americanism or not, but this is of course a global show, but a lot of people are bringing it up. There's kind of an expression that says that you always fight the last war, because maybe that's an American thing, because American goes around and does strange things, yes. But it's like you made mistakes in the last war, and now you've got conflict again, and you're trying to rectify the mistakes that you made before, but it's not the last war. It's a new situation. Does that make sense? Yeah. It's kind of like, yeah, you got to... Intuition's a funny little beast, because you have to think about why in that quick moment when you know something, and you got to step back and say, wait a minute, do I know it about this group? Do I know about this individual? Yes, let's go forward. No, I'm fighting the last war. You see? And so, yeah, it's... Elisa says that intuition is case-specific. I like it. Intuition is case-specific. It's specific to each case, specific to each situation. Yeah, I like it. Yeah. So what else is intuition within our context? Jan says it's understanding the underlying reasons for participant actions. Understanding the underlying reasons for participant actions. Just like we understand our underlying reasons, we got to think about our participants and why they're doing that, right? And then we have to work it around so they either can make what they're doing into a positive result, best scenario, or stop that and go ahead and create a better group dynamic. Sometimes participant actions need to be redirected. You like that as a diplomatic thought? Yes. Redirected. It means that they're about to breach the civility rules, for example. And you can feel it. And you can. If you've gotten some experience and you are truly in this group and really watching them and really thinking about it and listening, there are warning signs that somebody's about to breach the civility rules, right? You feel it. That's your intuition. And so you stop them before that happens. Always best to prevent the difficulty and not have to try to mend it after somebody has been, well, less than civil within the group. Right? Yeah. The civility rules, we talk about them quite a bit, and for the new people and also for everybody, because we like to think on them, and they're kind of the basis for a lot of what we do. The Recipe for Peace now has very few actual rules. In fact, you guys say that I say it depends a lot, because it depends. You're sitting in the situation, and you have to think of all the tricks of the trade, so to speak. But it depends what you're going to do, because every group is different, because they're made up of human beings, and human beings are all different. Yeah. So it depends is something that is true. I say it depends a lot because, well, it does. But the civility rules are always with us. They essentially say you will not be rude to each other. That's it. Everybody gets their turn. Everybody is treated in a respectful manner. Everybody is treated with respect. Everybody listens as well as speaks, right? Yeah. The civility rules means that we will treat you with respect and you will treat everybody else with respect too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And sometimes, depending on the group, because it depends, you might want to make them more formal if they need such a thing. I find that most groups, especially if they're groups of professionals, well, maybe I shouldn't say that because I just had one where they all tried to breach the civility rules at one time or another. I find that some groups need to have the civility rules spelled out, as in how much time each person has to speak and what direction we'll go in and like that. And some groups just know them naturally, and they don't act like that. So, understanding the underlying reasons for participant actions. Mm-hmm. Emilio and others are using kind of a phrase that I think is very appropriate. I don't know if it's an Americanism or not, and this is, of course, a global show. But a lot of people, Emilio and others, are saying that intuition within our context is really being able to read people, in quotes, R-E-A-D, read. We did a whole show on body language, which is kind of applicable. Now, I don't, and also on tone of voice. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know about this crossing your legs type thing, body language-wise. But we talked about, and we do this with some, we've done this afterwards too. We talk about body language sometimes and being able to read people. By the way, prior shows archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. And some body language is pretty darn obvious and you shouldn't ignore it because it tells you something, right? And yes, and it breaches the civility rules simultaneously, probably. This is all true, yes. People are saying if you've got that kind of body language, you've breached the civility rules. You have. And your group dynamic's going strange, so you have to do something about it. Being able to read people. Tone of voice, right? Facial expression makes a big difference. This is why when you go into, for example, a court or even one of these mediations where there is a transcript being made, you have to be careful what you say because the transcript is flat. It's just reading. It's just words on a page, right? And there's no tone of voice. There's no attitude to it. Therefore, you should never be facetious if something's being taken down. I'm not sure you should be facetious, just generally speaking. And that's really the truth because humor and sarcasm and facetiousness and like that are not always understood, and if they're not, then you've insulted someone, right? They've taken it literally. I try very hard not to be facetious or anything like or sarcastic. Well, sarcastic is rude in itself. But sometimes there's kind of a roll of the eye and a humor that goes with something. Well, you better be sure that the other people in the room understand that. And not everybody does. Humor is very, and being sardonic and like that, are very, very regional. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, this is an interesting point. All right, I'm going to throw it out there. Quite a few people, Sahira and others, are saying that if you're not a native speaker to whatever language it is, and my native tongue is English, of course, and I think this might be true. I try to be especially careful with nothing else. If whatever it is that you're speaking, whatever language you're speaking in the negotiation, is not the native tongue of other people in the room, they are less likely to understand humor and more likely to take offense and take it literally. So that's a consideration to take into account. Do I use humor? A lot of you have seen me actually in action, and you say that I use humor. I do within a rather narrow sphere. I don't use humor as in I don't usually tell a joke because it might not be funny. I use humor sometimes in an example story, but never against anyone or in any way affecting anyone directly in the room. Does that make sense? Because people are surprised. Okay, I've been in this business a really long time. And people are surprisingly quick to take offense. And then they stay offended. And what's the point, right? Yeah. So being able to read people is really intuition. So that you know, you get a feel for how they will react. And that makes a difference about how we are getting to the next step in the process and how we broach the next step in the process, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Shania and others are saying the key is being able to determine the next step in the process. And that's the part, right? Some groups... And you got to feel, have to intuition for the group dynamic, too. Not just for the individual participants, but for how the group is thinking. What they need you to do to help them reach their goal. Because after all, you're the leader. That's your job. You're supposed to help them reach their goal, right? Yeah. And so you need to be able to think about what it is that they need you to do, right? Some groups, and you have to be careful about your own preconceived notions about this, because some of the idea of this may be based on prior experience with this type of group. But remember, you've got the word type of group in there, because the last might be sort of like this group, but it's not this group, right? Right. Even if it's composed of the same, even if you've got this a lot of the same people in this group that you had in the past, some of them will be different, and that will change the group dynamic. Yeah, the participants create the group dynamic, and the people from the last group will react differently to their new participants. It'll be a different group dynamic, different issue also, different, because you're not there for the same thing, right? Right. So it is being able to take the next step in the process. You use your intuition, you use your experience, you use your ability to read the group and to understand the underlying reasons. You use all of this when you lead through the process step by step, right? And then you decide how you're going to broach the next step. How you're going to tell them. You might tell them outright, my favorite thing to do. Now we've completed that. Let's go forward. Let's talk about what our next step will be. That's by consensus, ruling by consensus. Always the best because people have the most buy-in to that. They reasoned it out. They decided in their own mind that this is a good idea, and therefore they've got buy-in. You'll get the most cooperation like that. Some groups, especially, workshops and seminars are kind of a false reality because you're the teacher, really, right? And sometimes even in the group, you're the teacher. But if you're the teacher on the stage, then you lead everybody. They want you to teach them how they want to be led. There's no you could have a more interactive workshop. That would be one where you have more than one day, probably. But basically speaking, if you are the teacher, then you teach and you say what we're going to do next, right? Different than a negotiated consensus, because you're setting an example. Yeah, a lot of people are saying, thank you for all of your participation, that the difference is that a workshop or seminar is just a class. it's an example. It's a teaching moment, and there's nothing really on the line. You've just come into the class to learn something. But real world, there's all kinds of feelings about it and opinions, and you need to reach consensus. Yeah, good point. That it's kind of, you know, every class is kind of a false example, because it's just a made-up thing, just to teach you how to act in the real world should this occur. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people are calling intuition an impulse, being impulsive. Yeah, and this show is not scripted. We go wherever it is that we take ourselves. We go where the conversation takes us, right? So what is the difference between being intuitive, using your intuition, and being impulsive? Because they're both kind of done on the spur of the moment, you know, and they're both taking the group with us to probably the next level, right? Yeah. So what's the difference between being intuitive, between intuition and being impulsive? Mm-hmm. You know, this is an interesting point. Retinale and others are saying that intuition is not just a reaction. It's a response based on experience. Intuition is not just a reaction. It's a response based on experience. And being impulsive, unreasoned reaction. Interesting point. Because impulsive doesn't have experience behind it, right? You just kind of decide. I've seen people do that. You know, you ever have you understand the concept of an impulse purchase? Marketing would like you to do this lots. You go into the grocery, I have this with candy bars. Oh, no, never mind. You go into the grocery store, for example, and you come in with a list. And you need the basic stuff. You need eggs and milk and bread and stuff like that. And then you go buy all the nice displays, and you go and the little sale offers and stuff like that, and they scream new at you, and like that, and maybe there's a little table set up with tastes, little samples, and somebody at the table who's put out the samples gives you a little talk, little marketing sentence there. And you buy something that an impulse that you had no intention of purchasing, you probably didn't even know about before you got there, and it just looks good to you, so you buy it. Mm-hmm. That is impulse. I saw it. I wanted it. It appealed to me. Intuition is based on experience. Now it doesn't really apply so much to baked goods or something, but it has to do. That's a good point. The intuition would have to do with the reaction to the person who is promoting the product, whether or not you felt them to be truthful, you felt them to be correct, right? Yeah. And that intuition would be based on the experience. Having tasted it. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a very basic concept of it, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Andrea says that intuition is a judgment after listening to the participants. Yes. You know our mantra at Recipe for Peace Now. Our mantra, we have one. It's listen before speaking. That's our mantra. And I actually, when I do any kind of a people thing, any kind of a negotiation, a workshop, a seminar, an alternative dispute resolution, whatever it is I'm doing, I actually seriously consider that sentence. think before speaking. Because I'm kind of outgoing, and sometimes I want to say something, but I think about it. And I'm the third party impartial a lot. It seems like I'm taken aside, for example. Or it's based on experience with other groups, and I have to think about this group, right? That's the intuition part. So think before speaking. That's our mantra. And that's the difference between intuition and impulse. You might impulsively want to do something, but you have to sit back and think about it for a second before you do it. Yep. Interesting point. Your intuition could stop your impulse. Cool. What a good idea. Zeta Being says that being impulsive is a personal response to a situation. Intuitive takes into account the group dynamic. I like it. Being impulsive is a personal response to a situation. Remember, we take our preconceived notions with us. Intuitive takes into account the group dynamic. Yeah. Impulse is just us. Intuitive. Yeah. I like it. Thank you for all of your participation, everyone. Owen says that impulse is without thought, and intuition is based on cumulative thought. Impulse is without thought. Intuition is based on cumulative thought. Based on your assessment of the group dynamic, perhaps, added to your experience, with others, that goes to your experience. Intuition is based on cumulative thought. It doesn't just come out of nowhere like an impulse. It comes out of what we've been doing, what we've done in the past, and where we need to go now is why we need to have some intuition, right? Yeah. You know, Diane and others are making a demarcation. I think it's fair. A lot of folks are saying that impulse is usually wrong. Intuition is usually correct. I'm going to say it's got a better chance. Impulse is usually wrong. Intuition is usually correct. Interesting point. That if we do something impulsively, we're oftentimes sorry about it. Didn't work out. But intuition is really, you know, we called it unconscious, not reasoning that's not real conscious, but it's reasoning, right? It's just that we did it so fluidly, so in the moment, that we didn't map it out. But intuition is really based on reasoning, based on thought, based on experience. Impulse is a quick response. And I'm going to say, impulse is usually wrong. Intuition is usually correct. More likely, I think, because intuition deals with what's in front of us, and impulse is personal, right? So now that we've decided that this is a pretty darn good thing and helpful, right? When should we use intuition as leaders? When should we break this out? When should we go, look, this is what we're going to do? My goodness, do you guys hear crackling on the line? I've got kind of crackling. Something I'm doing. Did I hit something? Goodness. We'll kind of fiddle around on our little digital and see if we can do something about that. I hope it's not in the show. You guys say it's not, that you're not hearing interference. Good, because I've got kind of interference. My goodness. Okay, so when should we use intuition as leaders? You know, Alex and others are saying as a guiding principle after assessing the group dynamic. Hello, we all still there? Yeah. No. Oh, good. The crackling noise stopped. Isn't that weird? Don't think I did anything. I've got a whole board here that goes with this, and it's kind of like volume and clarity and like that, and I just kind of messed around with it, and now the noise is gone. Fantastic. Hello, and how are you? Okay, so when should we use intuition as leaders? Alex and others are saying as a guiding principle after assessing the group dynamic. As a guiding principle after assessing the group dynamic. It's something we should take really seriously because it's our experience kicking in, right? Duyen says, after carefully listening to all sides, remember our guiding principle about listen before speaking? After carefully listening to all sides, because we'll have an intuitive opinion about what needs to come next and how we need to make this group of people into a strong group dynamic, right? Yeah. How we need to make this become something good and make it to our goal, to our successful outcome. So we have to carefully listen to all sides. Civility rules, everybody gets their turn. And then we need to make consensus. We need to, and that's where some intuition comes in. You know, it's really leadership skills, right? Yeah. I can help you create a strong group dynamic so you can go forward as a team and acquire and really reach your goal, really have a successful outcome, and understand the steps in the process, right? Yeah. When should we use intuition as leaders? Jamie says, when the process has stalled and you need to advance to the next phase. Yeah, a lot of times that happens with groups. They get kind of hung up on maybe even a side issue, and it's getting kind of not going forward. It might not even be so contentious. It might be interesting, and people are all kind of excited, but it's not. We've strayed off the path towards success. Does that make sense? We've kind of hit it off sideways there. And we need to all get back so that we can keep going forward. Because if we keep circling around, not going to make it. And the process is going to take forever. And people are going to get discouraged, right? Or else the time will have passed. But you need to, as Jamie says, break out the intuition when the process has stalled and you need to advance to the next step. It's really knowing how to read people and how to approach the group and gently steer them forward and get them off of the impasse they've reached in some way, or get them off of the issue that they keep arguing, but it's not relevant. It might be interesting, but it's not getting us to the goal line. You know what I mean? A lot of people have seen that. The phrase chasing their tails is being used. Ever see dogs do that? They actually get excited by their own tail, and they go around in a little tight circle yapping and trying to bite their own. It's just, chasing their tails. We've seen participants do stuff like that. Well, not literally, but similarly. Kieran and others are saying that we should use intuition as leaders in circumstances requiring diplomacy. In circumstances requiring diplomacy. Well, I think all circumstances require diplomacy, but some more than others, right? Yeah. And that's when you read people and decide and try to get a line on what it is they really want. And like all negotiation, a lot of times people say what they want kind of negotiable. Because it's like haggling. The seller says a high price, and then the buyer says a low price. And neither one of them expects to actually get it. They're going to meet somewhere in between. And then you have to, pardon me, and experienced sellers who haggle a lot, understand where the point is that the buyer won't go past. You know, there's the fake walk away, and then there's the real walk away, right? And everybody's different, and they have to decide using their intuition and their ability to read people how far the buyer is willing to go, right? Yeah. So that everybody is satisfied. The buyer feels that they negotiated a good price, and the seller has made a profit on the item. So it's all kind of a dance, right? Yeah. People are also comparing this to poker playing, because they say that you don't read the cards, you read your opponents in poker. Well, okay, yeah, you look at the cards too, but it's somewhat true. And the better a poker player you are, and the better your more evenly you're matched with your opponents, the more you read the player and not so much the cards. And you know there's a phrase. It's called a tell. It's something that people do when they're bluffing, for example, like a facial expression or being on the table. It's body language reading is what it really is. And you get better at knowing that, at reading body language, the more experience you have. And poker is all body language, really, because you're not particularly talking, right? And if you are talking, it's a distraction mechanism and nothing to do with the cards in the person's hand. Although you might decide whether or not they talk more when they've got a lousy hand. Yeah, see, that's a tell. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so anyway, so you read the people. And you read the people in your group. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When circumstances require diplomacy. You have to decide what diplomacy is in this instance. Because you have to be, as leader, sometimes you have to be kind of strict, right? And keep the process going and really lead and keep the participants from getting distracted. Can we call it that? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Orla says that when should we use intuition as leaders? Whenever dealing with other people. That's like always. Yes. Whenever dealing with other people, that's where we need to break out the intuition. Mm-hmm. So, we've decided that intuition is a really good thing. And we decided that there's some experience, right, in getting intuition and using intuition. And that it kind of flows, right? Because it's not a real conscious step-by-step reasoning. It kind of all flows together. There's reasoning, but it's unconscious in a way. Because you need to use it now. You need to use it quickly so that you can read people and turn the conversation to a more productive manner. Right? The process. Mm-hmm. So people are asking, how do we get this? Yeah. How do you train your intuition, for heaven's sakes? How do you acquire this skill? Because it is a skill. And it's experience. And it's dealing with people and being able to read them. Thank you. Quite a few people are saying you listen to this show. That's very nice of you. Thank you. And we did do a show all on body language. Mm-hmm. Archived on the website, recipeforpeacenow.com. And a lot of people are saying that you have to just practice and gain experience in dealing with people, mm-hmm. especially on a professional level. Now, you've practiced dealing with people all your life, but you have kind of chosen, or you've dealt with them all your life, like your relatives and your employer and like that. But when you're leading a negotiation, a lot of times you haven't chosen the group, and there are all kinds of diverse personalities, And you may not be kind of familiar with this kind of process or this kind of people, right? Yeah. And we all carry our inner selves with us every place we go, right? Right. So let's talk about this. Quite a few people are talking about the way to get experiences about watching and learning from experienced people. It's kind of passed down. But you kind of watch in a very observant manner. And then if you're very lucky, this person will become a mentor. And after the session, not during it, because that would be giving things away. No, not during it because that would be intrusive. But after the session, you could ask questions of your mentor so that you understand why they had this response to this and that response to that, right? Yeah. Very important to be able to inquire, to ask questions. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you watch experienced leaders. And Hassan and others are saying that we could get an internship. Yeah. An internship is a wonderful thing because you get college credit or some sort of credit for it. We have interns at Recipe for Peace now. I like them very much. Some groups will take interns. And we actually teach our interns overtly. We kind of have discussions all the time about what it is we're doing and what it is that they witnessed and why. And they do a lot of the outreach work. And a lot of times they get to participate if they've gotten some experience. We keep our interns for a while. You might also want to volunteer. Yeah, a lot of people voting for volunteering. Great way to get experience. Great way to watch somebody that you respect at work. Great way to participate in a group, to participate in a consensus building, to participate in a workshop or a seminar. You know, volunteers get to participate, right? They get to listen. They get to be an active participant a lot of times. Yes. There's nothing better than starting out as a participant because then you understand if you've got a good leader or not. And you get to have the feedback of the other participants. And that will help you to be a good leader because you'll remember how it was to be in the group and not leading the group, right? Yeah. Yeah, teachers, people talking about work study, which I consider kind of an internship, where you go someplace and you volunteer your services, they don't pay you, but you do get some sort of credit from perhaps your educational institution, right? Mm-hmm. You might get paid a little bit too, like a stipend. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The key to this really is that the more you practice, the better you get. Mm-hmm. The more you practice dealing with people, the better you are at doing it. The better you get at it. Yeah. The better you can read them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The more you practice, the better you get. Simple as that. Yeah. You know, Mahesa and others are saying that if you're going to volunteer, if you're going to go for experience, if you're going to become a group participant, it's good to volunteer to help all kinds of people, and the less like you they are, the better. Because you go out of your comfort zone, right? I'm kind of a believer in that you learn to reach consensus with all kinds of different kinds of people, right? Yeah. If you only stick to people like you, who really share your views and your background and like that, yeah, it'll be easier probably to reach consensus, but you won't have all those wonderful opinions. You won't see all sides, yeah. And that's really important, especially if you're going to be a leader, to be able to listen and see all sides. Yeah, Sadir and others saying the key is interaction with others. You practice your networking skills, and you make an effort to reach out and get to know your fellow participants, right? not necessarily have to be friends in the outside world, but you want to be able to deal with them. And you want to know what they think and what their underlying reasons are, right? And that's really networking. That's getting to know them. And yes, I have finally left. A lot of you guys say I never leave time for the recipes, and I tend not to, and it's really a bad idea. So I finally left time. We're going to do one of our recipes because it's a good segue, because Recipe for Peace Now uses food as a tool, really a networking tool. Now, you might be hungry. That's true. Might be dinner time. But really, the purpose of having food in the room for us all to share is so that we can get to read each other, we can get to know each other better, and have an opinion and reach consensus better, because we have something in common, even if it's just how delicious that dish was. Now, I'm going to say what I always say, and you guys know it. Yes, a lot of you do, and a lot of you don't. If you're going to have food, you need to take a survey. You need to find out if anybody has an allergy, a food prohibition, or religious prohibition to some sort of food. We're making a convivial atmosphere. We want everybody to have a good time and to not eat something accidentally that they wouldn't ordinarily have eaten. Right, right. You pass this information to everybody. I also think that is important to have what's in the recipe listed, not just what it's called, meatloaf, but say what is inside of it. People need to make a little list of the ingredients so that people, other participants, can run their eye down it and see if it's something they can eat. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm a big advocate of having at least one safe recipe. What's a safe recipe? It is ingredients that my participants would have eaten in the past. They're common to my area, and this is a global show. You get to decide what it is that's common in your area. For example, I always think in my area, curry is an adventure recipe. A lot of people have never eaten curry around here. Mm-hmm, yeah. But it might be very, very common in your area. So you decide what's common. A safe recipe, we've taken the survey. Looks like everybody can eat it. We're still listing what's on it, what's in it. And it doesn't have ingredients that my people would not have seen before. I think we're going to have time for the tomato chicken pasta. I am a big advocate of not using a fettuccine or something long and messy that needs tongs to get out of the dish, because we're going to have it potluck style and it's too messy. I'm a big advocate of using pasta that is individual pieces, like a rotini or a bow tie or something like that. Something that goes with a spoon, that you could dip the spoon into the dish, hold your plate close and get it onto your plate, and then you don't have to mess with it eating it either. You can just stab it and put it in your mouth. Yeah. So I'm a big advocate of that. So we're going to have tomato chicken pasta. Let's have about 6 to 8 boneless, skinless chicken breasts. We're going to cut that into chunks. It's easy for me to get that. It comes like that in my area in a package. If that's not easy for you and you want to bone and skin the chicken, hey, just cut the whole thing into chunks. It doesn't have to be breasts, of course. 2 tablespoons of oil. Let's have 2 nice garlic cloves minced up. You think I use too much garlic? Then use less. Mm-hmm. Let's have a couple of tablespoons of lemon juice. You might want to squeeze it out of a lemon. I actually usually use a bottled product for this. It's simpler and it's delicious and it's all lemon juice. So you can decide. Let's have a little bit of oregano, like a half teaspoon. Let's do the same thing for the dried basil, dried oregano. Yeah. So that's our chicken part. Now we're going to have our pound of pasta that we're going to cook al dente, and we're going to drain it and put it aside. Yeah. You can put a little bit extra in there if you want, like a pound and a half. Something that we just discussed is something that's pretty, but is solid. Now we're going to have a tomato cream sauce on this. We're going to have another two tablespoons of olive oil. Mm-hmm. Let's have a nice big sweet onion. I do like a Vidalia. I like them to be sweet. Mm-hmm. Couple small garlic cloves again. We're going to mince them up. Let's make a big garlic clove. I like garlic. Mm-hmm. We're going to have 2 big cans of tomatoes, you might as well use the kind like the it's the 60, 18 ounce type cans, the big ones. We're going to take them with their juice and chop them all up. You might as well buy the chopped tomatoes. I mean, let's face it. A cup of heavy cream. Do not skimp on that. Don't use milk. Your cream sauce will not adhere to your pasta. It's a fattening dish. Just accept it. So we have a cup of heavy cream, a cup of grated Parmesan. Goes with the cream, nice. Yes, here we go. So we've cooked our pasta, right? We set it aside. Yes, we're going to make this. So let's take our chicken breasts that we've chopped into chunks and put them in a big plastic bag or some sort of a covered dish. What we're going to do is we're going to marinate them. We're going to add the olive oil and the garlic and the lemon juice and the basil and the oregano. And we're going to swish it all around. If you've put it in a plastic bag, which I would do, which would make it easier, you just shake it all around, make sure it's all incorporated, and just stick it on the counter for half an hour. You don't need to leave it overnight or anything. It'll just soak up. Yeah. And now we're going to, well, we've cooked our pasta. Now we're going to make our sauce while the chicken is marinating over there. Yeah. We're going to get ourselves a nice big pot, nice big saucepan. We're going to heat the olive oil, of course. We're going to add the onion. Stir it around until it gets translucent. It smells nice. 3 minutes. Add the garlic. Same thing, except less than 3 minutes, like 30 seconds. I mean, it doesn't take very long. It's because it's a hot pot. We're going to stir in the tomatoes. Continue cooking it. It's already starting to boil, right? Because we've got the juice and everything. We've just plunked the tomatoes in there. You can puree them if you'd like. It'll make a smoother sauce. It's a step that I don't usually do because I'm lazy. No, but you can puree it. It will make your sauce not chunky and more smooth, if you'd like. It probably is better. I usually just kind of mash them. Mash the tomatoes into the sauce and make kind of a, it is pureed, but kind of a thick puree. Now we're going to turn down the heat because we don't want to curdle. And we're going to add the cream. Stir, 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 stir. And we're going to add the cheese at the last minute. Now we've got this going. We're, of course, going to cook our chicken, right? Did I not say that? People are asking me. Jeez, thank you for catching me. You know, after the chicken sat on the counter for the 30 minutes, we cooked it. We browned it on all sides in the oil. We cooked it through. We cooked it really, really thoroughly because we don't want it to be raw. Because we're not cooking it again. We're tossing it in with the sauce and the pasta. Yeah. So you marinate it for the 30 minutes on the counter. You heat up the oil in the pan. You cook it real good all sides because you've made smallish chunks, right? You set it aside. You wipe the pan out because you're starting with new oil. And you do this whole thing with the onions and the garlic and the tomatoes and the cream. We've gotten to the heavy cream part because we've lowered the heat, right? Yeah. We're going to stir. Take us 3 minutes. Stir, 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 stir. If not, it'll separate. And we're going to take it off the heat. It's now hot sauce. We're going to put in our grated Parmesan. We're going to now take our cooked marinated chicken chunks, throw them back in, toss them all around in the sauce, right in the same pan. We're going, and it's easiest if you've used a big enough pan to now take the pasta and throw it into that pan and toss it around. If you don't have a big enough pan, you can put the sauce of the chicken into the pasta, but we're going to mix it all around. Yeah, simple dish. Thank you for catching me. Jeez, I didn't cook the chicken. Simple dish, delicious. Everybody likes it lots. If you had the facilities, you could cook it together. People tell me that's not cooking it together. It's watching somebody cook it. It doesn't take too much, and you can talk and laugh and chat and have something to smell delicious in the room, right? Yeah. And that is our safe recipe. We will get to our adventure recipe, hopefully next week. It's a seafood potato bake. I like it. It's kind of like fisherman's stew with the with the shepherd's pie with the potatoes on the top. We'll do that next week. It's our adventure recipe because we've run out of time. Thank you. And thank you for catching me about the chicken. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for coming. If you want to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Website, recipeforpeacenow.com. All of the prior shows archived on that website. Thank you for all of your participation. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening and giving me your time. Thank you for being here. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.